Thank you, Victor. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. ESPN 102.5 The Game. We go from Mason to Mitch. Mitch Light from The Athletic. We'll talk some college football with him. Mitch, how you doing?
I'm good, Darren. Hope you're well.
Yeah, everything is good on this end. And I want to start outside of the SEC for just a moment and just get your thoughts on the back and forth with Dabo Swinney and Mike Norvell. And I just continue to be amazed at Dabo Swinney, some of the comments that he makes. And he's done it pretty consistently, and I think he gets a pass because everybody likes Dabo and he's had a ton of success and, you know, blah, 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 blah. But this latest round
and
of
he's
his
in a market where he kind of controls the media.
Course.
It's a small town.
He does it kind of. He
yeah,
does
I mean,
control.
You sort of strong-arm the messaging there.
Sure, which goes on in a lot of places like Columbus, Ohio, and Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and Baton Rouge. I mean, it's there's no stranger to college markets, you know, the coach dictating, you know, what gets said and what's written about them. And this is no different. But, man, and Dabo, rightfully so, has been getting pounded for his latest round on Florida State. What did you make of that?
Well, Darren, I don't think he is getting a pass. I mean, I think your comment originally was more just in general. He just says things, but I agree with your what you just said. He's getting pounded for it. It's one thing to say something. It's another thing kind of dig in and repeat it the next day. And I've seen some speaking of controlling the message, I've seen some Clemson media come to his defense. Well, he's just answering the questions from national media. Well, he's had a day or two to think about his answers and say maybe they weren't the most sensitive things to say. And in this time, you should always err on the side of caution. And I think he is as guilty as any coach we've seen in recent times of being tone deaf. These guys they live in their own bubble, their complexes. The physical complexes, they're in their buildings, they're around their coaches, and they make a ton of money, and they sometimes don't realize how the real world works. And he doesn't care. He's just going to keep – clearly he doesn't care. He's going to keep saying what he wants to say. I would love – and this would be a – you know, I don't know what Mike Norvell's bank account looks like, but Norvell kind of said something about, well, if they need the money – the $300,000 I'll contribute. I would love to see Mike Norvell just write Clemson a $300,000 check. That would be hilarious. Obviously, it's easy for me to say. But I believe Florida State, they didn't want to play for health reasons. They're entitled to that. They've had a lot of issues down there. And for Dabo just to say that they basically wanted to forfeit, that's very irresponsible.
I had an interesting conversation with some folks over the weekend about – giving, you know, a team from the outside, the Power Five, an opportunity, especially this year. And I realize it's just good talk, and that's what we do on Sports Talk as well. So I'll just throw it your way. I mean, now that we've all seen BYU for most of the season, albeit against lesser competition, I would say, Cincinnati had a little bit of a close call, finally, for the first time against UCF on Saturday, where they'd come back and win. But nonetheless, they get the W. What do you really think? When you've watched Cincinnati this year, when you've watched BYU, do you think, is there really a case in your mind that one of them should get a shot if they run the table as that fourth team?
Two answers to that. Do I think either one of those teams could, you know, represent themselves well in a college football playoff?
Yep.
Sure. I do. I mean, maybe not in one game if they, you know, I know it doesn't work this way, but if they play in five games, maybe they play well once. I just don't think either of those teams are more deserving or have a better resume than some of the teams at the top. Now, I was playing around earlier, a lot of different scenarios, like if Alabama beats Florida and this happens, if Clemson beats Notre Dame, there's a lot of different scenarios, but I don't see either one of those teams getting close to a good enough look unless some just craziness happens. I think the teams that are ranked at the top and that will be ranked at the top, even a one-loss Texas A&M team, a one-loss Florida team, are more deserving. I don't think having a zero next to your name in the loss column makes you a championship-caliber team. And this might not be fair, and I know as someone who, you know, obviously worked at Athlon Sports for 18 years and did rankings, I always said that we evaluate teams each year based on that team. You don't take history or what happens in the past into account. But Cincinnati had a good team last year. Now, they lost to Memphis twice close, but they had a very good team. They're probably better this year. Cincinnati played Ohio State last year and lost 42-0, got just wiped, run off the field. So, again, just throwing it out there. Not saying it's fair to say that, but they played a playoff-caliber team last year and got destroyed.
What do you think they really are, though? Are they really legit? I mean, let's make this a little bit tougher. Okay, Florida loses to Alabama in a tight, tight game, back and forth affair in the SEC championship game. The Gators are a two-loss team. Would you take Florida or either one of those teams over Florida?
Great question. Historically, I have been, the way I've looked at rankings, I don't think there's a huge difference between 0 and 1, but I think there's a big difference between 1 and 2. So you're kind of, if you lose one game, I get it, whether it's an elite team or you slip up, like Alabama in years past slipped up against Ole Miss, and, you know, those Ole Miss teams were good but not great. I would be very torn. I would think that Florida would be a better team there. But if Cincinnati ran that was undefeated, I would have a tough decision to make. I would usually lean towards the Florida there, a team that's played a more difficult schedule. But that's a very interesting scenario. I think this Cincinnati team is among the better Group of Five teams. You know, UCF, obviously, the team that beat Auburn was maybe the best Group of Five team we've seen in the past, you know, 3, 4, 5 years. This Cincinnati team is really good. I haven't seen them a ton, quite frankly. I saw a decent amount of the UCF game just because of work. I've had to focus on certain games that I sort of have to watch, so it's not like I just watch them just because they're on. But, you know, they're clearly a very good team with good talent and skill position, and, you know, they got a great defensive coordinator in Marcus Freeman, and they deserve to be in the top 10, clearly.
If they were to play each other, who wins, Cincinnati and BYU?
That's a great question. I would probably lean towards Cincinnati, but I don't know. I'd love to see that. And I think I haven't read it yet. It's on my to-do list to read on our website, The Athletic, today. We have a kind of a counterpoint between Stu Mandel and Chris Vanini, two of our writers, about whether or not they should play each other, whether it makes sense for them to play each other. That's a game that I think we'd all love to see.
Well, that's what I said this weekend. We couldn't really, you know, we just kind of batted around all these scenarios. I could have kept going forever on this topic. It's fun to do it, but then in the end I said, look, no matter what happens, if they both get left out, which I suspect we all suspect will happen, and I don't know if it's fair or not fair one way or the other, but I said they should find a way in the bowl game. Yeah, if they can make it happen, just put those two against each other in a bowl. You know, I don't even know if logistically you can make that happen.
It's not going to happen because there's only one spot in the group in the New Year's Six for a Group of Five team. But yeah, I mean, just to kind of put a bow on this, I under all the scenarios, I think we're late enough in the year. I don't think there's going to be enough craziness to legitimately open the door for one of those teams.
Yeah, I don't think so either. With this Tennessee thing, and I'll tell you what, I hate that this game isn't happening because I really wanted to see Vanderbilt at this stage and Tennessee at this stage against each other on Saturday, because 5 weeks ago, I literally laughed when Vince was on with us that this Vanderbilt team, what if they beat Tennessee? Because that's how different the programs looked 5 weeks ago, and today no one would be laughing at that matchup on Saturday. I really wanted to see it, but we know that's not going to happen. But when you look at this Tennessee team, especially in the second half, and just the stats keep, the wrong stats keep piling up in Jeremy Pruitt's, you know, on Jeremy Pruitt's resume, which, like I said, they're stats you don't want to be attached to. Why is this happening, and how do you think the rest of the season is going to play out?
Yeah, you look at Tennessee and you watch them, and this is where the frustration comes from the fans, is they have a good team. They have a good roster. They're not ready to compete with Florida and Georgia and Alabama, and probably Texas A&M yet, but you see them and you say that's a good football team. They have a good offensive line. Look, go back to the Missouri game, how they dominated, which turned out to be a decent Missouri team. They just ran them off the field. They out-physicaled them. They did everything they needed to do. You watch them for a half against Georgia. You watch them against Auburn at times, and, you know, Eric Gray's running the ball all over the place. It's not like they don't have the talent. That's the frustrating part. It's the third quarter stats. They don't get more damning than that. And it's not all coaching adjustments. Certain things happen, but a lot of it is. And how this thing ends up, you know, I'm usually overly, I talked to you guys for years. You probably find all the times where I'm over too conservative when I talk about coaching tenures. I said, oh, he'll be back. That's kind of my stance now. I think there's just too much money owed to Jeremy Pruitt, and he's Phil Fulmer's guy, and Fulmer's not getting fired, and Fulmer hired him. And there's signs that this can be a good team. Like, South Carolina fired Will Muschamp because they were clearly moving in the wrong direction. You look at that team, they didn't have a lot of talent. There wasn't much skill there. Their recruiting wasn't good. They're like the 46th ranked class this year after being consistently top 25 classes. Other than you just saying Jeremy Pruitt's not a good coach, you can point to reasons why Tennessee should be much better next year. Now, I know people will say, oh, you say that every year about this team. But as the talent matures, they could be a better team. So I don't. It's not the same situation as South Carolina, I guess is my point.
Talking to Mitch Light from The Athletic, talking college football. So, Mitch, we've just talked about the net result of Vanderbilt not playing Tennessee on Thanksgiving weekend. Hopefully they do get to play that game because I think we're all very intrigued for the reasons we just discussed. Is there anything else that jumps out at you in terms of the net result of what this does, the league shaking up the schedule for obvious reasons? They want to get as many games in as they can, but what else did you see when all of this was thrown at us yesterday afternoon?
Well, I mean, I don't think there was any grand conspiracy or anything like that. I just think they're trying to maximize their the games. Like, there's been some talk that Tennessee was, you know, maybe flirting with some low numbers this week. So you have a situation where Arkansas had some issues and maybe Tennessee had some issues. So rather than wait later in the week and find out both those teams can't play and then you're stuck Wednesday or Thursday, and then Vanderbilt and Missouri don't have a game, like, would you want to schedule that game on Thursday this week? Well, no, let's just go ahead and be proactive and schedule it there. So I know they're trying to get Alabama, LSU in, but they're just trying to maximize the schedule, and I think there's a definite plan to try and play Vanderbilt, Tennessee later in the year. So I just think it's something the league kind of needed to do and was proactive about it.
What did you make? I asked you last week about the teams in the Big Ten that could challenge Ohio State, and Ohio State probably thinking, you know, the stronger our league, the better we're going to look. What did you make of Indiana sort of challenging Ohio State? I don't know if – I mean, they were sort of playing catch-up the whole game. I never thought Ohio State was going to lose the game, but Indiana did have the ball at the end with a reasonable chance if they make a great drive, and they did it against Penn State. You know, they could have conceivably tied the game up. Pretty good showing by Indiana. And meanwhile, Northwestern turns Wisconsin over five times. Northwestern intrigues me. They're not overly talented. They don't have that really special player, but they just seem to be rock solid, and they keep winning.
Yeah, first of all, who's that guest you had on last week at 115 who said that Indiana just feasts on turnovers and, you know, there's no way Justin Fields is going to turn the ball over?
And he turned it over, what, three times?
Yeah. Three times. My assessment of that game was sort of like same as yours. I never thought Ohio State was going to lose, but it was much more difficult. Ohio State really showed some issues they have defensively. They don't get after the quarterback. And think of what they've had. They've had a run of both Bosa brothers and Chase Young, three of the, you know, top pass rushers in college football over the past 10 years. They don't have that this year. In their secondary, they're trying to figure out some combinations in their secondary. In a weird way, and Bill Landis, our Ohio State writer, wrote this, in a weird way, that was a good thing. Now, if Ohio State runs the table, they're going to be in the college football playoff. But the fact that Indiana gave them a good game will impress the playoff committee and keep Indiana in the top 10 probably. So that helps their schedule. Playing a close win kind of helps their schedule strength. Again, I don't think they'll need it. And same thing with Northwestern. If Northwestern keeps winning and they're a top 10 college football playoff team and Indiana keeps playing well, Ohio State will have more quality wins. What that will only do is open things up if they lose a game. Now, I don't think they're going to lose a game. If they're 6-0 or how many ever games the Big Ten is going to get in and they lose to Northwestern in the Big Ten championship game, Would they get in? I don't know. That'd be a tricky proposition right there. And you're right, Northwestern, they're very, very good defensively. They're forcing turnovers. They made life difficult for Wisconsin offensively. And they're just, they're sort of like a less talented old school SEC team that just not great offensively, really good defensively. They get the lead and they just make life very difficult for you. You never felt Wisconsin was going to be able to string together enough first downs to win that game once Northwestern got up by more than one score.
It really was wild looking at Wisconsin. They look so different than they did against Michigan the week before. Let's circle back to the SEC to end it here, Mitch. One of the more intriguing games was Georgia struggling to beat a very average or a team that in Mississippi State that's looked like a mess at times. And in that, they come out of there with JT Daniels looking like the answer at quarterback. Very, very odd. I would imagine there's a lot of questions being asked in throughout the state of Georgia this week. Like, JT Daniels, boy, he looks so much more talented than what they've been putting out there at QB.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fair assessment. They're kind of cryptic about Daniels at first. You know, he wasn't cleared in that Arkansas game yet from the ACL injury, but he was after that. And, you know, it's not, you know, 100% certain why he didn't get a chance earlier. He played well. Now, aside from that, there's some troubling things for Georgia. They did not run the ball very well, and that's alarming because they've been a good running team and Mississippi State had been horrible on offense. You know, last time out, Mississippi State got doubled up from a yardage standpoint against Vanderbilt, punted seven straight times. So that everything about that game was surprising and weird. And
yes,
Mississippi State goes down there with under the 50, what, under the limit really that required to play. That thing had blowout written all over, and that just kind of tells you shows us how difficult it is to kind of assess these teams. It's more week to week. But for Georgia, you know, I think you can say they found their quarterback moving forward. JT Daniels is clearly looks like their most talented player on that roster right now, or most talented quarterback on roster, I should say.
No question. And at the same time, I would guess, and this is just how fans roll, but that I'm sure there are those asking, what would have happened had they just gone with him from the start, for better or worse, as soon as he was cleared? Just maybe take some growing pains early, but would that have maybe given them a better chance to have a better record at this point? It's easy hindsight.
Yeah, fair question. Looking back, the worst thing that could have happened probably was Stetson Bennett playing well against Auburn. I think
right. That
was a game that was a classic Kirby Smart game. They played great defensively. They ran the ball, and their quarterback made just enough throws to win the game. So that gives the coaching staff, hey, that's our guy. He is good enough to win with. If they win that game close, but they get bad quarterback play, maybe they go to Daniels earlier. Not saying it would have made the difference against Florida. Probably not. But clearly you need to score some points to beat Florida this year, and that offense was not good enough to do so.
Mitch, good stuff as always. Really appreciate it. You and the family have a happy Thanksgiving. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Sounds good. Take care, guys.
That is Mitch Light from The Athletic. That's where you can find his work. Always enjoy our college football discussions with him after Derek Mason every Tuesday on the program. We'll come back and put a bow on this show next. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.